And you're very welcome to Encore, an exhibition of drawings and the poems which the drawings have inspired. A mother and son and some sisters all on the stage. And a play in Portlaoise about unravelling. You're very welcome this evening to Encore on Midlands 103. And every Thursday night, we bring you the best of what's happening in the arts in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. And don't forget, encore at midlands103.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with the programme. Tonight, an exhibition of pencil drawings by the renowned artist and draftswoman Eve Parnell, and the work is accompanied by a series of poems that were written in response to the drawings by the poet Caoimhín Mac Umfrey. That exhibition launched today at Burr Theatre and it continues until the middle of November. We'll also be chatting to the wonderful Dana Davis, the incredible singer. She's an extraordinary voice, but she and her son Jack Daly are both involved in a brand new musical. It's called The Sisters and it's happening at the Mill Theatre in Dundrum. As we speak, actually, it's on tonight and it continues until the weekend. And I'll also be chatting to James Reardon, who is the man behind a production by Brew Theatre of a play which James has written. It's called Selvage. And if you're a knitter or a sewer, you'll know a little bit about what that means. But James has put together what is an extraordinary performance, a combination of different skills and representations of anxiety and how that can be manifested, particularly on the stage. And it sounds like a riotous performance in very many ways. So that is just a little bit of what is to come on Encore this evening. I'm delighted to have the pleasure of your company. I suppose the big good news story of the week this week is the announcement that the Esker Arts Centre in Tullamore will be open before Christmas, and that is certainly very exciting news. Hopefully next month we can say that now that it is October, that it's next month we'll have a new art centre in Tullamore. Something that's happening in Westmeath at the moment is the Dean Crow Sessions, and this consists of four free music gigs which will be happening in the Dean Crow Bar over the course of October, November and December. And a little while down the line, at the end of October, there's Alton Conlon, then there's Shane Hennessy in November, and in December there is Shiva. But this weekend, on Friday the 7th, tomorrow night, Peter Doran, who is a singer, songwriter and musician from Mullingar, will be performing, and we're going to play for you to start off the programme tonight. We're going to play one of the tracks from his 2012 album, Overhead the Stars. The song Every Little Thing has been played over 1.3 million times on Spotify. So we're going to play that for you. And then after the break, we will be delving into a little bit of unravelling. So you're most welcome to the programme this evening. And you can hear Peter Doran. That's just one of the terrific tunes you can hear from him tomorrow night in the bar at the Dean Crow Theatre. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be unravelling the Selvages here on Encore on Midlands 103. Do stay with us. And you're very welcome back to Encore. Selvage has been described as a dark yet joyous show about unravelling tightly wound modern anxieties. It's coming to the Dunamase Theatre in Portlaoise on the 13th of this month, which is a week from tonight, actually. And I'm joined on the line now by the artistic director, James Reardon, who is the man behind the play. And I suppose, James, it's wrong to call you the writer. There's a bit more than writing going on in the creation of Selvage.
Yes, that would be fair to say. So I've written it and I am performing it alongside a musician composer named Anna Malarkey, who's also from Galway. And so we kind of developed the idea through an artist development program in the Druid called Fuel. And so she has been a friend of mine for a long time. And I kind of just had these ideas around finding creative explorations into the world of, well, knitting and different ways people deal with their own anxieties or their own kind of unease. So absolutely, I wrote it, and some of it comes from my experiences and some not. But I'm definitely, front and centre in terms of on stage.
Selvage is a phrase that would be familiar to people who knit and who sew. It's that it's the edge that doesn't ravel, technically shouldn't ravel, because it should be well put together as an outside edge on fabric or on the start or the end of a piece of knitting. But yet this is a piece that is about ravelling and unravelling, and about what you describe as the gnaw, which I thought was a great word.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. So selvage, as you say, it's a line of self-securing knitting. And, you know, people, it actually, a lot of my own grandmother is in this show. You know, she was a big knitter and I grew up with her knitting. And, you know, it's a kind of a form of active meditation. It would calm her down, it would take her mind off things. It's using her hands. And I thought it was a nice analogy for the different types of things people do, you know, to calm them down. It doesn't have to be meditation or yoga. You know, there's plenty of ways to kind of occupy yourself in a physical way that helps to calm yourself down mentally almost. So that's kind of where the idea from selvage as a title came from. And obviously it sounds a bit like salvage, so often it's confused. But I like it. I like it as a word. And I like the knitting as an analogy into a different kind of space.
And you say that you're front and centre in the performance, in the writing, and also in the, you know, in the production. Tell me what that means for you as a person, as an artist, as a performer.
Well, it's been directed by a friend of mine called Lara Campbell. So I kind of approached her and said, you know, I have this idea for a script and I'd like to be in it. And it's funny, at the very beginning, you know, I kind of was like, no, I won't be doing the voices of the different characters. I think I'll just tell the story. And she was going, what are you talking about? We are getting in there. And so she was great to have with me on it, because she kind of took it out of me, I suppose. So, you know, I had the ideas on the page, but it was in my head. And so she had to kind of get it out of me physically. And it was a really beautiful collaboration we've done together. And we're about to go and do again. You know, we're just about to kind of get it back on its feet ahead of Dunamaze next week and then a national tour around the country. So, I mean, it's, as I say, you know, some of it, there's bits of my granny, there's bits of my own life in there, but it's very much also a piece of fiction. You know, it follows a young man called Joe, who lives with his granny, and his granny is this kind of roaring, rebellious Bolshevik who just is biting the institutions, and she gets locked up, and so he's left on his own, and then this gnaw that we speak about starts to kind of take over. So it's actually narrated by the gnaw, let's say. So I am telling the story as kind of a, let's say, a servant of anxiety, one like an anxious energy that is hanging out with Joe because he's been left alone. And it follows his journey through when she kind of gets locked up and through the different people he meets on his way back to her. And each of those characters, which I play, you know, through a bit of costume, and it's very physical theatre inspired. You know, I would have studied physical theatre devising in London and in Berlin some years ago. And so I learned a lot of just different techniques. You know, there's puppets, the shadow puppets. There's a kind of a lot of physical movement in it, a lot of different character, you know, shifting between characters. So it's quite an imaginative piece. It's like inventive in terms of the different ways we try and tell the story. But at the same time, because of Anna's music, quite evocative of what it can feel like when something is gnawing at you and the release you get when you maybe find an avenue that helps to calm that down.
And we'll talk about Anna's music in a second, but to have a story narrated by that anxious drive. What was like that like for you as a writer? And then, you know, as you're delivering those lines, to be in that space, it strikes me as very challenging.
No, actually, to be honest, it's quite fun. It's quite a fun character to play, I suppose, for lack of a better word, because he's very physical and there's a lot of play on words around teeth and gnawing and lice and rats and termites and like insects and animals that kind of gnaw at things. It's quite like there's a lot of imagery in how he is, and he's talking a bit with the audience, and he's not only kind of contemplating or kind of chatting through Joe's anxieties or the different characters and the different ways that their anxieties manifest, but also, you know, the wider world. and the people in the audience. You know, it's fun. We play a kind of a game at one point where there's tokens involved, and you know, it's very joyous, even though the subject matter is quite sad in a lot of ways, because you know, we're all dealing with something, and I wanted to bring a kind of a positive energy, or like I wanted to find imaginative ways to bring it onto a stage as we tell this story, so that there's a little bit of a pathos at the end when we get back to granny and we get back to knitting. And you know, that knitting is so repetitious, and you know, it's one after the other, and lines and loops and rows, and it's just it's a nice thing to be able to put on stage, especially because knitting is something that has had a bit of a resurgence, and
it has,
and people do identify with it.
But
yeah, no, it's a fun part to play, although it probably sounds like it's a little bit dark, and it certainly is. It definitely has a lot of jumping around.
Brew Theatre, I don't think, has been too often in Portlaoise, and the kind of theatre that you do there. And I imagine when this play, this performance was first on stage in 2019, in pre-COVID times, what are you expecting the experience for the audience to be this time around, when we're all in a different space, having been through those couple of years and living through the aftermath of it now?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, going back to the script and going back to the play post-COVID, it means a whole other thing now, and it lands in a whole other way. And I think we've all had to reckon with our own gnaws, you know, and we've gone through terrible times, you know, individually, collectively, as a society, and we've had to kind of figure out ways to keep ourselves going and make ourselves calm. And so I think it finds a new resonance. Not that we're changing a huge amount of it, and we're not mentioning COVID or anything in it, but I think that people will absolutely engage with it from a different point of view now than back in 2019.
Okay.
And we're delighted to kind of bring it outside. You know, we're Galway based, and it's lovely to have a home crowd, but it's really exciting for us and important, you know, to bring the work out of where it's made and to see what lands and to see where audiences meet you. And what resonates with them. So it's an exciting time for us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You mentioned the word resonate there. And obviously when you brought Anna Malarkey on board in the development of this idea, you had an idea in your own sense of what the how you wanted the music and the composition to resonate with the audience. Irish Theatre Magazine described her music as what you might get if a sultry ménage of Bjork, Billie Holiday, Philip Glass got together at Wicker Man Festival.
isn't that a sentence?
It's great. It is great. That's why I had to read it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But how does that fit in then finally with the performance, when you put all of that emotion and the theatricality and the music together? Does it tell the story? How does that help to tell the story that you really felt the urge to bring to a stage a few years ago?
Well, you know, what we're aiming to make, and certainly with a lot of the work we're doing, is about it's making evocative theatre. You know, that's why we come to the theatre, to feel, to be immersed. And it is, you know, although theatre is an art form, it's a collection of many art forms all brought together in this one moment, live in the same air, people looking at the same thing beside each other, you know. And when that is electric, it can be, you know, so life affirming, or it can really shift energy in people. And I'm so passionate about it and the power that it has to kind of shift things. And with Anna, we very much, you know, created it together in terms of, I might say, this is the kind of vibe, or this is what's happening, and she would go off and compose, and then she'd come back and we'd do it together and we'd build on it. And, you know, there's moments where it gets really kind of full on. You know, she's there with she's a kind of electronic composer along with singer and pianist and instrumentalist, but she has lots of buttons, and, you know, I don't really understand it, to be totally honest with you, but she has
lots of equipment.
Absolutely. Lots of equipment and gear. She's written some beautiful songs. One of the songs is actually on her new album from the show called The Upside Down. And it absolutely elevates what you see on stage, because, you know, let's say when the Gnaw comes back to keep narrating the story, he has a certain sort of soundtrack. when we start to, he falls in love, Joe, at one point, and we have a beautiful moment where, she, you know, it elevates it. And, you know, when we made this first, we were a young company. We didn't have huge amounts of money. I mean, we were generously supported by the Arts Council, but we were very much like, it was our first, this is our first show, really, in a theatre that we made. And so it didn't, you know, we relied on each other to build magic. And I think you'll really see that in the show, that there is lots of different creative ways of storytelling.
James Reardon of Brew Theatre, thank you so much for talking to us on Encore. After the break, we will be talking to one of the country's finest musical theatre singers and much more. And she's living in Eden Derry. You're listening to Encore on Midlands 103. I should, of course, have said before the break that Selfage, which is the performance we were discussing with James Reardon, comes to Dunamace this night week, which is the 13th of October. Running as we speak in the Mill Theatre in Dundrum is a brand new musical. It's called Sisters and it features one of the country's finest musical theatre singers who just happens to live in Eden Derry via the American East Coast, West Coast indeed. And it is not just Dana Davis who performs in Sisters, which runs until this weekend. Her son is also involved. She's been telling me about the show.
Yeah, but we opened last Saturday, the 24th, which, by the way, was really extra special because this musical has been in fruition for many years, so it's been in its sort of pre-writing stage, and it's been through workshops. As a matter of fact, it was 2 years in the Stanford East Musical Theatre Initiative, which is funded by Andrew Lloyd Webber Foundation, and also with NYU's Tisch Musical Theatre Writing Program. So it was really exciting that it finally was up and on stage in front of an audience. And the experience was amazing. Standing ovations, huge cheers. You just never know the new musical how it's going to be received. And we were all on very much on a high afterwards, knowing that it was such a success and that the audiences really related to it and enjoyed it.
Take us back to 1971 and the story of Bernadette Boland.
Yeah, so this story of Sisters takes place in Dublin, and it is really set around the feminist movement that was all happening, worldwide. But in Dublin, it was really happening in a place on Baggot Street called Guy's Restaurant, and the owner was Margaret Guy. Now, Margaret Guy was Irish, but born in Scotland and moved back to Ireland. Her husband was Polish, she was just a kind of person who was no nonsense, very practical, get things done. And she started having meetings in a room above her restaurant, and that's where this Irish women's liberation movement was born. And so this story takes a fictional character, Bernadette Boland, who is a single mother. And she finds herself now waitressing at Guy's Restaurant and being influenced and kind of brought into this, this life-changing experience of being around all these incredible women who really started a wildfire in Ireland, in that they were protesting and also standing up for women's rights, the right to work, the right for single women, and especially what was very important to Margaret Guy was that every family deserved a home. So all of this, you know, it tells the story about how Bernadette and all of her own sisters in her own family are impacted by this changing world. And so it's a personal story, but it's also surrounded by the political story of the times as well.
So we have Bernadette and we have her sister Kathleen and her other sister Nolene, and they are all at completely different stages in their life and in their engagement with society.
Exactly. Yeah, Nolene is the youngest and she's just, just full of life and wants to go out and, you know, have the whole package, the whole dream. And she finds as well that she becomes very disillusioned as well with her first experiences of love. And Kathleen then follows the route very traditional. And at the beginning of the show, we see how she gets married and how that as well, that sort of disillusionment of what marriage was going to be like for her. And also we'd have a journey with their mother, how by the second act we can see how everything is starting to crumble, because she feels that she's done everything right, and yet she's looking at her daughters and they're going on a completely different path, and one that she can't understand, and in direct conflict with the Catholic Church. And so that is really what it was about as well. This, at the time, the Catholic Church was very against, you know, children being born to single mothers. They felt that it was tearing apart, you know, the fabric of communities. And as a matter of fact, I play two parts. I get to play Margaret Guy, but I also play, because we're it's an ensemble piece, we also play several characters, except for the actress who plays Bernadette, but the rest of us play several different characters. And I actually play, so not only do I play Margaret Guy, but I play her opposing character, which is a fictional character, Sister Barry, who is okay. head of the Catholic Child Care Center, you know, committee. Mm. So it's really interesting to see how everything was, the passion of both sides, how it was all coming to a head.
It must have been really interesting for you to delve into that history and Archbishop John Charles McQuaid and what a different world Ireland was in the 1970s and the 60s.
It's absolutely incredible. And to think how far we've come and how many things we enjoy and also probably don't even think would even be an issue for, you know, that women, you know, many women had to give up their jobs once they started having children, that many widows didn't have any rights either, or if you're a wife who was abandoned, you still didn't have any rights to, say, sell your house or own property. So many things that were happening, and as well, just we also delve into the whole you know, attitude towards contraception. And so Margaret Guy and the Irish Women Liberations Movement, you know, the women, you know, got on those trains to Belfast and were bringing back contraception and distributing them to women that were in need of contraception. And they were so brave, yet they were also terrified, you know, taking those chances. But they believed so much that times needed to change and attitudes needed to change.
So it is, in many ways, a show about women, but they're not only women in the cast, because your son is also performing. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm really proud to say that my son Jack is making his professional theatre debut as well. So He plays several different characters, but one of the characters that he plays is the character is Aidan, and he's more like the boy next door. He's madly in love with Nolene, and she wants nothing to do with him. But he also he goes through a transition where he really wants to do the right thing and stand by her when she is in need of someone to look after and to stand next to her. And so it's really lovely to see, you know, to see his journey as a character, but also for me as his mom, to see him really challenging himself and performing. And it's really, it's been a wonderful opportunity for us.
Have you found yourself learning all of his lines as well as your own and glancing in his direction during rehearsals to check that he has everything under control?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I think it's probably the other way around. I think he has a much better memory than I do, and he's been really wonderful. He's very, very quick, and I really envy that. So I think it's probably he knows all of mine from me, you know, asking him to go through them on the car journeys, you know, the commute up and down is where a lot of our memorizing and thing was happening. So, but yeah, I would say I would be a little bit nervous at times, you know, but once we got through opening night now, you know, all of that kind of the jitters and things kind of start to dissipate, and you start to feel a little bit more like, this is great fun, you know. So you just, it's like that roller coaster. Once you get off the roller coaster, and you're like, you just want to do it again. So Yeah, it's been nerve-wracking, but it's also been really rewarding.
Even from your base in Edenderry, you have been really busy over the last number of years, COVID accepted, doing the voice work, doing the musical theatre. You have been busy.
Yeah, I have to say I'm really delighted, especially now this year would be I have been working professionally for 40 years. So, and every year, either a professional show or concerts, and I still doing the cartoon voiceover work. And even during COVID, I was very honoured to be in the cast of The Mikado, which was produced by Lyric Opera. And that was a live stream performance from the National Concert Hall. And then a lot of the Christmas shows as well with festival. I did Wizard of Oz and I did Oliver. And so it's been really a wonderful time. And I have classes. I teach singing and I teach drama in Edenderry. And I've recently started up a lovely group for moms or dads, carers, and their babies and toddlers. So just to start music at a really very early age. So I'm busy with that work as well on the weekends and after school. And it's been really challenging, but at the same time it's really great because I feel it's kind of a gift to be so tired if you're doing what you love to do. I'd rather be busy than not working.
Okay, well, the show still has another week to run, another few nights to run. Sell it to us. Tell us why we should get into our cars and take ourselves on that road to Dundrum, to the Mill Theatre, to see The Sisters, the musical.
Well, firstly, the cast. Absolutely dynamic. It's a very young cast for the most part. I'm kind of, you know, the granny on the stage compared to this young cast. They are so dynamic. Many of them have just come out of training from London, have come back to Ireland. The cast is all Irish. Some are from the north, some from the Republic, but I have to say they are right at the beginning of their star rising. So the performances and the voices and the dancing, they do it all. And also the story is wonderful. It really is. You just get lost in it. And I think with the music, there's such a variety that there's something for everyone. So there are very funny moments as well. It's not, you know, there are some sad moments and there are some very intense moments. So that's what the audience seem to love. It's like it just goes by so quickly because at the end of it, there's such a feel-good factor to it, because what we're doing is we're really celebrating, you know, all of our sisters, you know, and all of our friends who stand up and inspire people to do the best that they can do. And also that the world can change, you know, and that's what I think why I think people are really loving it, because it's really a story not only of conflict and not only to remember how far we've come, but also it's a story of hope and of, you know, women coming together and creating such a powerful change. And they did all this only within a year. So, but standing up and speaking out for what's right, you know, and I think the world really needs to hear that.
And if you'd like to catch Sisters with Dana Davis and her son indeed performing in it, you can catch it at the Mill Theatre in Dundrum until Saturday night. And you're very welcome back to Encore this evening. Earlier on today, a new exhibition opened at Birth Theatre. It features the work of artist Eve Parnell and the poems of Caoimhín MacUnfrey. It's called An Leas Sulis, or The Sunbeam. Eve is a renowned draftswoman and her graphite pencil works inspired the poems by Caoimhín, and those they will operate, I suppose, as kind of companion pieces of a sort, the written word and the pencil drawings which inspired them. Eve and Caoimhín have been in conversation with Gildas de Payac of Birr Theatre. They chatted away earlier on this week as they finalised the hanging of the exhibition. And Gildas began by asking how they had come to know each other.
So Eve Parnell is a visual artist and a friend of mine of long standing who is from Dublin. So Eve and I worked on some projects together, and in particular one of our naval ships, the L.E. Aoife, when she was being decommissioned from the service in the Irish Navy, Eve Parnell requested permission to donate an artwork to the ship as a commemoration of her service around Irish waters. The ship was being purchased by the Maltese Armed Forces, and I happened to be the press officer of the Naval Service at that time, so contact between Eve and me around that event led to a friendship. As a result of that interaction, I asked Eve if she might consider designing a command certificate for the Irish Navy, so that officers who take command of an Irish Navy ship are presented with a formal certificate designed by artist Eve Parnell. That collaboration then led to some other projects that we worked with together. In particular, we were asked to write a poem and a commemorative artwork to mark the 1920, the year 1920, where the North Monastery School in Cork was commemorating the year that Cork was burned. And in that year, there were three Lord Mayors from the North Mon School, each of whom in turn was elected to office. The first, Tomás McCurtain, was killed, assassinated by Crown forces. The second mayor, Thomas McSweeney, was starved to death in Brixton Prison on hunger strike. And the third Lord Mayor, Donal O'Callaghan, was exiled from Cork after the place was burned. So we wrote a commemorative poem, which was published the year before last, and Eve did the artwork for that. So this collaboration is long-standing and has led us to the current exhibition proposal, which you so kindly accepted.
Eve, who's Quivín?
Well, Quivín is a person that I've worked with on a number of artistic collaborations, and he's a very extraordinary poet. And we've, as Quivín has explained, we've done a couple of projects, the Ship Command Certificate and the North Mon commemorative poem with accompanying drawing. And that's where I discovered Quivín's extraordinary writing.
And what is extraordinary about his writing?
Well, I sent him, we bounce ideas back and forth about art and poetry and culture, and I sent Quivín one of my pictures, I think, one time, is that right? And you had written a poem in response to it? Was that the order? I can't quite remember quite the order, or was it that you wrote a poem? And I thought it was extraordinary, and the poem is called Mackerel. And it's so visceral and so, it's kind of noisy, and it's worth hearing the poem or reading the poem, because Quivín's use of words, like, he doesn't use lots of words where it's not necessary, but at the same time he's not stingy with his words. So I just think his craft is very well honed, I guess. I don't know anything about poetry because I'm a visual artist, but I just thought his poems, I just found them extremely noisy and extremely visual, and they're much more than just words on a page.
What I'd like to come in on that is it was Eve's drawing that came first, and the drawing of the mackerel heads, and it is actually one of the drawings that's on display here. And it did, I initially wrote a prose piece, and then I translated it into a poem, which I felt was quite effective, and usually that would just be for me, but I sent it to Eve. She really liked it, and she really liked how it developed from the drawing that she had produced. Very fine drawing. The result of that then was I realised that what I had done was technically called an ekphrastic poem, which wasn't a concept I was familiar with. So I looked it up and I said, okay, ekphrastic poetry is poetry that is generated in order to describe or inspired by an objet d'art or a particular object. One of the most famous in the English language would be the Ode to a Grecian Urn, for example. So this idea of ekphrastic poems then is what led Eve to make a submission here, whereby she would provide the drawings and then I would react to those drawings in poetry in an attempt to produce truly ekphrastic poems, which are genuinely sprung from Eve's fine art. And I think the measure of success in this space, which is a particular type of poetry, is if the poems need the drawings in order to be understood. And I think most of these poems do. So it's Eve's art that has produced the poems. They wouldn't exist if those drawings did not exist. That is not usually where a poem comes from, but in this case, we do feel that we have achieved something that that the poem and the artwork together produce an effect that neither would have on their own. And so we hope that anyone who comes to this exhibition here in the Burr Theatre will notice that and will see that the poems and the artwork are interrelated in a way that wouldn't ordinarily be the case.
Can you tell us a little bit about the work that's on display? First of all, why the title that you chose, and then after that, the inspiration for the pieces?
Yeah, the drawings are what we have on display in the exhibition called The Sunbeam, or en las solish, The Sunbeam, is the they're prints. So it's a limited edition set of prints, and we have some prints have only drawings, but most of the prints are accompanied by Queeveen's poems. So they come from... Hang on, I have to think where I'm going with this. I'm just looking at them. Okay, so I'll describe the drawings. So the drawings, each drawing has in common a border. It's a kind of a... It's a drawn border. So there's a subject, which they're all animals, and they range from rabbits to lambs to salmon to drake and cows, and each one of them have in common this border, which, as I said, is drawn. And in most cases, the animal breaks the border of the drawing, so he's entering into our world. The significance of the border is that it's actually inspired by a book of fairy tales, so it has a slightly decorative element. But fairy tales are also quite sinister. So it's nice, but there's a sinister element to all of these drawings. What I found interesting is that the poems, Queeveen, when I sent Queeveen images of the drawings, I didn't say anything to him about them. I just sent an email with a load of attachments. And he just responded. And I was really surprised, pleasantly surprised, that he didn't just see like a fluffy bunny rabbit or a really nice looking drake or a really beautiful looking lamb. He saw what was going on at a deeper level. So he read the drawing and his words accompanying it helped to explain rather quickly the message that I'm conveying in the drawings. Each drawing takes about 2 weeks to do. The prints and the drawings, the original drawings, they're A3 in size, so they're nice and manageable. They're easy to, you know, fit in, and they're easy to handle. And the combination of the drawings and the poems together in this print makes them a unique set. So and they're all black and white, which is again nice and simple.
That is wonderful, isn't it? And that is Eve Parnell and Queeveen MacAnfrí, the artist and the poet, in conversation with Gildas de Payac of Burr Theatre. And we'll come back to that interview in the next couple of weeks, because Gildas gets into the conversation with Eve about the work and about her technique, her specific technique. So I'm really looking forward to hearing that. And a lovely selection of three voices on the programme. That exhibition is called Sunbeams, or also Ascailge an Leis Solish, and it is supported by Offaly Arts Council office. It opened today and it closes on the 18th of November. And that is it from Encore for this evening. Sitting in for Joe tonight is Mark Hughes. He'll be here after the news at 8 o'clock with the best of Irish and American country music. I'll be back next Thursday with Encore. Till then, take care of yourself. Good night.